Welcome to Fire Rescue International podcast series. My name is Erin Gibbs, and I'm with the IAFC. With me today is Dr. Kazan with Los Angeles County Fire Department. He will be speaking at FRI on his session titled Automated Drug Dispensing System. Give us a short overview of your session.
So my session is going to be on the LA County Fire Department's launch of our what we think is the country's first fire department-based pharmacy program. So just roll the clock back a little bit. So I took over as the medical director for LA County Fire back in 2015, and I started by going out to a lot of different fire stations and just kind of trying to get my IQ around where we really needed to have things fixed and where improvements were necessary. And one of the most common things I would hear is that our controlled drug process was really terrible. So I would hear that our paramedics were sometimes even reluctant to give morphine because they didn't know how long it would take for them to be able to restock. And we have minimums, and if they drop below their minimums, they go out of service. So it was almost like there was a high bar before they would even want to give those medications because they were afraid they wouldn't be able to get them restocked in time. And then you fast forward a little bit to the end of the year. In December 2015, the county hospital pharmacy director, which is where we got all of our controlled drugs, reached out to us and told us that effective at that, they wanted to make it effective immediately, they would no longer give us controlled drugs under their pharmacy license, that we were going to have to transition that process over to my medical license. And the reason they're doing that is that the State Board of Pharmacy was holding the pharmacy director's personal pharmacy license accountable for any drug diversions or any mishaps that occurred along the way. And since they were handing the drugs off to our utility truck drivers and never saw them again, they just weren't comfortable with that process. And so they wanted to transition it over to me. And having heard all the complaints over that time, it seemed like kind of the ideal time frame to develop a new process and really try to envision the process that we wanted to create and then build it from the ground up. And we had some pretty significant challenges in terms of timing because the pharmacy was anxious to get us off of their system. And as we looked to create a model, we ended up sort of copying the hospital model where we wanted to build a central pharmacy and have satellites out throughout the county. We ran into a bunch of regulatory hurdles from both the federal level at the DEA, the state level at the Board of Pharmacy, and state law with paramedic regulations. So it was actually a very interesting story in how we navigated through those hurdles and ended up creating our fire department pharmacy. It took us about 18 months to do it, and it opened up a whole new realm of different things that we discovered as we went through the process. And some of those things were that our fire stations actually order their own pharmaceuticals, and they order based on what their perceived need is, not necessarily based in any reality. And what a lot of people may not know is that these drugs come in packs. So you might order glucagon, and it comes in a pack of 12. And even though your station may only use two in that year, you can't order less than 12. And so what we'd find is 10 would just expire on the shelf. And so our pharmaceutical budget, and our department is pretty large, our budget was somewhere in the range of about $1 million, and we were wasting about $400,000 a year in expired pharmaceuticals. So as we designed this process, we built it around having a pharmacist that would manage it. The pharmacist brings in the know-how of pharmacy law. They understand the ordering process of pharmaceuticals. And even more importantly, since I'm the only physician on board, I could not manage something like this and still be the medical director of such a large program. I would have to put my entire focus on this. So bringing in a pharmacist allowed us to take some of that workload off of me and put it in the hands of someone who really knows what they're doing, because physicians receive almost no training in pharmaceuticals. So it has been an amazing thing for us. We're transitioning our ordering process into our central pharmacy. We've seen massive savings, and we're projected to have about a 40% reduction in our pharmaceutical budget, which has offset the cost of opening up the pharmacy, and yet at the same time brought in a whole new level of expertise that is, I think, largely unknown in the EMS world.
Yeah. So how do you think this model will be successful in departments across the country?
One of the things that we came to recognize is that EMS is being increasingly held to the same standards for quality and accountability and evidence-based practice as everyone else in the healthcare system. In the emergency medicine world, because I'm an emergency physician by background, they've begun to embrace the idea of bringing in pharmacy expertise over the last 10 or 15 years. There's still quite a few hospitals that don't do it, but more and more hospitals are bringing them in and realizing the value of their expertise. And we believe that the model that we have is really highly scalable. So while we're a large enough department that we can actually have a full-time pharmacist, and we've actually brought in a second full-time pharmacist to help manage our program, even something like a quarter full-time equivalent of a pharmacist could bring in a lot of expertise to a small or medium-sized department. So what I'm hoping to see is that when people see the value of bringing in the pharmacist, that they can look to either pool their resources with other small departments, or if you're a medium-sized department, even to bring in just a part-time pharmacist to come in and weigh in on your program. EMS has always been kind of a separate program and really felt itself to be different than the way the hospitals run things. But increasingly in the world that we live in, EMS is seen as another healthcare provider that's going to be held to those same standards. And then the other thing is that we're in a really legitimate opioid crisis, and it really doesn't discriminate. We have, unfortunately, drug diversion that does occur even on a large scale in the EMS world. And we can't be expected to manage our controlled drug programs any differently than the hospitals do with any different level of accountability or security. And the system that we built really is designed around being able to track drug from soup to nuts from beginning to end. We have full accountability of every vial of controlled drug, and the system is designed to do it. We didn't have to build that. So, and then the last thing would be just the amount of cost savings that's associated with it. I don't think that our department was unique in the way that we order drugs and the way we over-ordered things and allowed things to expire. And pharmaceuticals are really expensive. And sometimes I don't know that I didn't know how expensive a nitroglycerin spray pump really is, but it's $200. And until you get your mind around how expensive these pharmaceuticals are, the likelihood is that other departments like us, we're just wasting massive amounts of money.
What do you hope attendees take away from this?
So a couple things. I'm really proud of the way our department mobilized around this and took this challenge as an opportunity to build the system that we wanted to see. One of my biggest pet peeves is I cannot stand workarounds. I really like system design, and I can't stand workarounds. And what our system prior to this was really just a series of band-aided solutions to other problems. But when you have an opportunity like this to try and envision the system, the ideal system as you see it, and then build it from the ground up. So I'm hoping whether it's in a pharmaceutical program like this or in other things, that this would inspire some of our attendees to look at solutions from the ground up rather than just fixing the problem at hand, but looking at the bigger system. Also, this was a great example of how you can work together with your stakeholders. I used to think of the DEA or the Board of Pharmacy Investigators as showing up with windbreakers on and kicking down our doors, but that's not at all who they are. They've been extremely supportive and helpful, and we really couldn't have done this without them. So not being afraid to bring in even your regulatory stakeholders to weigh in on your system and design and build it together. And then last thing would be not to just view this as a solution that's only for a large department like us, but this model is really scalable, and it can work in large and small EMS provider agencies just the same way as the same type of systems work for large and small hospitals. So you don't need to reinvent the wheel, but you do need to know what your legal boundaries are and, you know, learn from those around you. So I coach my kids in AYSO, and one of the lessons that they had was that a good coach is a good thief. That if you walk by a practice and you see another team running a drill that looks good, go ahead and steal it and apply it to your agency or to your team. So that's what we've done, is we took a model in the hospital. We went to our county hospital partners, sort of delved into how they operated, and then we took and translated it to our world.
Check out this session at FRI. To learn more about the complete education program, visit iafc.org/FRI.